This week on the Ocean Cruises podcast, we are speaking with Matt Steverson from the YouTube boat building channel, The Duracell Project. Matt with his partner Janneke have been sailing for years, and after cruising on their previous 40-foot cruiser, they decided to take on a mega project on their forest property in Washington State. They were given a 60-foot open ocean racing sailboat named Duracell, once owned by the legendary sailor Mike Plant, who sailed the boat in the first Bendy Globe. Matt, with his shipwright skills, and Janneke are now completely refitting this boat's interior and exterior to turn it into a fast, comfortable cruiser to sail the high seas. If you want to follow Matt's build, check out his YouTube channel, The Duracell Project. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, watch the interviews on YouTube, and download the audio on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Mate, just take it away. Like, there's a lot to explain with this thing. You know, it's quite a big project.
Yeah, there is a lot to explain. Yeah, we've had the boat for not quite a year yet. Got into our yard last June, and we'd been working on getting it here into our place for a couple years. We learned about the boat back in September of 2019, and I'd been looking for a boat that was long, lean, light, and I wanted a total refit project, a boat that I could kind of start from scratch and do everything that I wanted to do to make the boat a cruising yacht for us. And the goals were to have a boat that was fast and very safe at sea and could kind of take us far and wide if we want to. And so I was just barely kind of scratching the surface of starting to look for project boats. And this one came up, you know, very, very early on in my search. And we started talking with the owner. I found the boat on Sailing Anarchy. He had posted to a forum on Sailing Anarchy. And I just started chatting with him, and the boat had been in his backyard in Seattle for like 25 years. He had lost the rig when he was attempting his own solo circumnavigation, and lost the rig in the middle of the Pacific, and got the boat back to Seattle and put it in his yard. And that was back in like 1996, something like that. And so the boat had been sitting in the yard, in his yard, for a long time, and it was in good condition, considering what had happened to it. And so, except for that, it didn't have a mast. And so after a couple of years of going back and forth with him, trying to figure out how to get the boat into our yard, it finally happened. And so, yeah, now we're at, we've been working on clearing out the boat for the first couple months, just getting everything out of it, starting to cut out the cockpit, and then moved into building the doghouse. And that is a feature from our last boat that we really, really liked. And so we're just kind of expanding on what our last boat was.
What was your last boat?
So our last boat was also was a home-built sloop. It was like a 40-foot sloop.
Okay.
That a close friend of mine built in his backyard in Seattle.
Built from scratch. And,
yeah, he designed it and built it from scratch and in his backyard in Seattle. And so, and him and his wife lived and cruised on it all up and down between Seattle and Alaska for 35 years. And then they moved up to a bigger power boat, and we bought that boat from them, and I refit it, and we took it cruising for a few years. And yeah, we loved the layout in it. And so we wanted something that was faster, that we could build our own layout in. And so that's where the doghouse feature came from. And now that it's turning into summertime, we are starting to work on projects that are outside I have like a shed over the boat. And so but it only covers 20 feet of the boat. The boat's 60 feet long. The shed is only 20 feet long. And so we're starting to work on projects that are outside of the shed. So I started modifying the cockpit, and I'm expanding the size of the cockpit basically now is where I'm at. So, yeah.
Just about this boat, because the boat's got like a pretty colorful and interesting history. Can you just explain, like, this boat's done a lot already?
Yeah, it has. So it was built and sailed by Mike Plant, who was an American solo racer, ocean racer. He's from Minnesota, and Duracell was his second boat. His first boat was an open 50 that he sailed in the BOC. He actually won his class in the BOC, and then quickly decided that he wanted to move up to the next class of boats for the BOC. But at that same time, I think right after he finished the BOC, his first BOC, the first Vendée Globe, which is a solo circumnavigation nonstop. And so he had the boat designed by Roger Martin and built it for the Vendée Globe. And he raced it in that race in 89 and 90 was the first Vendée Globe. He was doing really well, except that around New Zealand, he had a small rigging failure. And so he had to go, he tried to anchor up in a small cove on a small island. I think it was called Campbell Island. And the boat was drifting into the beach at this really windy anchorage. And some meteorologists that were living on the island came out in their Zodiac and helped him actually kind of start to pull the boat off of the beach. And so he was immediately disqualified. Like he actually disqualified himself from the race at that point. And, but he continued to around the world and finished the race into France. I think he ended up, he would have ended up in fourth place if he, you know, if they continued to take his time. But anyway, he went on and sailed in the next BOC as well on Duracell. So the boat's done two circumnavigations. And then he sold it to John, who we bought or gave the boat to us. And Mike Plant went on to build Coyote, which was his third boat, which was also an open 60. And it, when he sailed it from the United States to France, the bulb fell off of the keel and he was lost at sea. So, the Mike Plant story is incredibly interesting. He was a really, really fascinating person and a really good determined sailor, solo sailor. And then I recommend that people, there's a movie about him called Coyote, the Mike Plant story. And there's also a really good book written by his sister. I think it's also called Coyote. So the boat's done two circumnavigations already. Plus the next owner, he did the Pan Pacific race on it. So from LA to Japan, plus a bunch of other excursions on it before he lost the rig on it. So
the hull has been tried and tested.
Exactly.
Capable. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It was after the second BOC that Mike Plant did, the boat was in Rhode Island on a mooring ball. And I think this was in 92. There was a hurricane called Hurricane Bob that hit New England, and the boat washed up on the beach there in New England that year. So I've actually been in touch with some people who helped fix the boat after it went up on the beach. So
it's been beached twice, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I never know why the meteorologists give these hurricanes such non-offensive names like Hurricane Bob. Yeah. You'd be like, great, Bob.
Yeah.
Spend some time with Bob.
Threatening at all.
No, like if you called it like Hurricane COVID, people would be terrified. You know what I mean? That would be a better one. Yeah. So in terms of how you ended up acquiring this massive famous boat for free, how did that happen? Like, how did the whole story come together?
Well, there was just a post by John who he posted on Sailing Anarchy, and he was kind of open to anything as far as what the next phase of the boat was going to be. And so he didn't say that he was, asking for any money for it or anything. I think that he knew that the condition of the boat made it relatively, not worth anything. The keel wasn't on it. The keel was in really bad shape. There's no mast. is basically just a hull. And so, and it was going to cost somebody, you know, some money to get it off his property.
Yeah.
And so, but he really wanted it to go to a really good home. And so that's why it took us so long to kind of get from the time that I first messaged him to the time that it came into the yard, was that he needed to, I guess, gain our trust and make sure that it was going to a place that he knew it was going to, something was going to be done with it that was worthwhile. So
yeah.
I'm sure he wishes that it was going to somebody who had tons of money and could spend all that money in a boatyard getting it refit, you know, into a super yacht or something, but or in another racing yacht. But we were kind of the only ones that stepped up to the plate and, you know, had a viable plan, I guess, is what happened.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's such a big project. It's like you would more or less have to do the DIY route to actually make it worthwhile, even the amount of money that you'd have to sink into it. Otherwise, like if you're getting contractors to do it, then it's costing you hundreds and hundreds. It would be crazy at that point.
Yeah. I think if you were to take it to a boatyard and have it done, it would be a $1 million boat by the time you're all done.
Right. Yeah. So for $1 million, you could get a pretty decent new boat.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Right.
So we were after the pedigree, I guess, is, you know, that's it. It was designed by Roger Martin, who's a really, really great designer and has designed many like incredible boats. And again, like you said, it's been tested, ocean tested. And so we're very confident in it.
What material was your previous boats? The one that was custom built?
It was a foam, foam cord, fiberglass boat.
Okay.
Yeah, it was nothing special.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's like quite a transition. Going from like a normal 40-foot kind of cruiser to, you know, big old 60-foot racer.
Yeah.
Did you want to actually get something like that, or were you looking for something a bit different and it just came up and you were like, go for it, it's a good opportunity?
No, this is what we were looking for.
Right.
Almost exactly. I was kind of open to lots of things, but in my ideal world, I wanted an old race boat, and race boat because, you know, they're fast. They basically have no interior in them, and an ocean racing boat because I knew it was going to be, you know, built sturdy. And so this is pretty much exactly what we were looking for. I was during our cruising, I'd spent a lot of time reading about yacht design, and I got really into Steve Dashue's designs, the Sun Deers and the Deerfoots and Beowulf and FPBs. And I kind of took his philosophy hook, line, and sinker, that long and narrow, easily driven yachts are kind of the way to go. We're sacrificing like interior volume, having a long and narrow boat for speed and safety. And
I think everybody knows that, but boat builders don't like to admit it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. They cut better through the waves. They move quicker. They're nicer to sail. Yeah. Matt, you were so lucky that you ended up coming across that, because like with that spec of boat that you're actually looking for, it's not like you can just go on yachtmarket.com and you've got a bunch of them to choose from. You know, it's like there's a few, and you could have had to have gone who knows where. I mean, were you only looking for one in the States as well? Or like if you found one in France, would you have considered bringing it over?
Well, yeah, that like I was just barely starting the search. You know, I had spent time, like there isn't really a place to go to look for project boats.
Yep.
You know, especially like big, huge 60-foot project boats. And so I was incredibly lucky to come across, of all boats, dirt, like an open 60 for one, that was in Seattle, so close to our home, and that it also happened to be Duracell, like the Duracell. And so, yeah, it's an incredible opportunity.
That's fate. Like, you've got to believe it. the chances of something like that just happening and popping up, like, you know, oh, the dream boat, where is it? Down the road. Wow, for free. Okay. Like, that's
it. It was dumb luck for sure.
Yeah. So like when you started, I mean, I imagine like the idea that you had going into the project before you found the boat is pretty different to what you've got now, because your whole budget must have surely changed. I mean, you probably, I mean, I imagine you had an idea of how much you want to spend on like an actual boat to refit. Now you've got a boat for free and it's so close. What does that budget look like for getting it cruise ready?
Oh, that is a really difficult question. I mean, it's a tough question. We, like, our budget was that, I guess it's better to explain how we intend to build the boat, in that we wanted a big part, like, yeah. When I first saw the boat and started thinking about what it would take to get the boat in the water, I had to make a lot of assumptions, because we're not going to be buying everything brand new, things like a mast, and, you know, and so we're going to be relying pretty heavily on trying to find as much like used stuff as possible. And so I think to get the boat in the water and sailing, maybe not have it like ocean ready, we could probably, have it sailing for like $150,000 is what we're hoping for. Yeah. It's still a ton of money, but it's also, we're doing it on layaway, where it's going to take us, you know, 4 years to get it done. And then, you know, we had this whole YouTube idea to hopefully help us out. And, the budget thing will be constantly in flux.
Yeah.
And just because we're not sure how the YouTube, you know, channel is going to go. And we're not sure what we're going to find as far as a mast and sails. And, but I think at the bare, if we're really, really lucky, really, patient about what we can find out there that's used, I think we could do it for $150,000.
Yeah. So, and you know, like putting this whole thing on YouTube, it could be so beneficial for the build itself, like from a couple of different perspectives, like procuring equipment or like a mast, for example, for it, you're going to have such a bigger reach, because like you're broadcasting what you're doing. Not only that, but like, you know, Selden might say, okay, you know, this is actually a really proven, popular, famous boat, and it's been completely refit. It's all going online. You know, let's just stick a mast on it. Those types of things happen quite a lot now, especially like if you've got like social media influence. It could really work out. Man, maybe the whole refit could be free. Who knows? Yeah. Works out really well.
It's not free yet, but yeah, it's, and that was all part of the plan, was that, you know, we knew that we had to have a really, really unique project, because the boat has this crazy history. We're not just refitting it, we're like totally modifying it.
Yeah.
And, you know, building a whole interior and modifying the exterior and doing all kinds of crazy stuff to it. We knew that some people would be very interested in seeing what we're doing. And you're right, already we've had all kinds of like really interesting input from folks that are watching all over the world. And, you know, masts have come up, and we're looking at one really closely right now that might fit the boat. And, you know, naval architects are helping out with design work, and, and the YouTube thing it's proving to be extremely beneficial already.
Yeah. I mean, just tapping into knowledge that people have, and like, you know, people who are passionate about building boats and just passionate cruisers in general, you know, they tend to be like really nice, open-minded people. They're so helpful when it comes to stuff like that. I just imagine you get a bag of interest, and like, I mean, naval architects just offering the services to you to help, like, that's incredible.
It's awesome.
So cool. Yeah.
There's a huge bank of knowledge out there. And I love just like asking people's opinions on the channel and seeing what comes back. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. So when you started thinking about redesigning it, because like for anybody listening, this is not like, you know, you reupholstering a sofa. This is a bare boat and you're completely doing the whole thing from scratch. Are you modeling the, I know you've made some changes to the exterior. I know you've done the doghouse, which is really cool. I'm really excited to see what you do with the cockpit and the stern. Is there a specific type of interior that you wanted to model it off? Because I imagine you want to take it very far away from what it is now, because it's basically set up like with bunks and a, you know, so it's just a racing boat inside.
Yeah, there's not even that in it. Like basically the interior when we got it was when you stepped in from stepped into the doghouse from the cockpit, there was like this little pod. It was like a, if you're in a spaceship, you know, there's windows all around and there was this big chair and that's where they like sailed the boat from. It was just like all the navigation equipment was right there. To the right, there was like a tiny little stove and microwave. And then the toilet was like around the corner and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
And then there was this huge gaping hole in the rest of it that was just like, just expand like tons of space. And so there was nothing there. And so, yeah, we like our plan is one head, three staterooms, a really big galley. That's like the, that's what my wife, Yanni, she was, that was her one like requirement was a nice big galley. And so, it'll be a very like
open lucky concept. You've got a wife that enjoys cooking. My wife would be like, get one with our kitchen, you know. Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be kind of like an open concept. Lots of interior space, lots of light in the interior, which is really important to us. So
cool. And what's it like in the part of the world where you are for like acquiring different types of materials like wood? I just noticed the cost of like lumber today. I'm refitting my house at the moment. We're getting it finished so we can sell it and then get our next boat. Wood has gone up by like three times over the last year. It's crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy. And, you know, the boat is already, is built out of foam and fiberglass, and we're going to pretty much continue to use foam and fiberglass throughout. Okay. Like I've been using Divinicell foam, 5-pound PVC foam, and I actually just got a line on, it's recycled. It's, they used like water bottle plastic and recycled and to make recycled foam. And it's great stuff. And it's way cheaper than like this, I guess they call it virgin plastic PVC foam. And so it will end up hopefully being cheaper than buying like plywood bulkheads and stuff and building all of the interior out of plywood. And so, and I would really like it all to be very built into the hull where everything is fiberglassed to the hull to make the, you know, just helps make the hull even stiffer than it was before. So, but here in Port Townsend, this is one of the United States boat building hubs. It's a big wooden boat place, but we have a huge boatyard here where, you know, a lot of the Alaska fishing fleet comes here to get hauled out and refit. Tons of yachts come in to get refit. So this is a really, really great place. One of the best places to be refitting a boat, not to mention all of the knowledge that's around.
Yeah, it's just those little things, do you know, like you're able to walk into a shop that sells, you know, the fiberglass or the resin and like, have a conversation with somebody who can help you across the counter. Like, that's invaluable as well. That's one thing that we don't really, I'm based in Spain. Like you don't really get that in Spain. Like you walk into a chandlery or, you know, anywhere where you're just buying basic materials from and it's like pretty limited knowledge across the desk usually. That's why YouTube is like so helpful when it comes to like refitting or renovating anything over here.
Of course.
That's really cool. So about the exterior changes that you've, obviously you're having to make quite a few from it, from like a structural perspective, because you're cruising the boat, you're not racing it. Although you'll probably get to your cruising grounds pretty quick. I imagine you'll be the fastest one between anchorages. And what type of like work and professional opinion did you like source to go about that? Because like, I imagine you're probably going to change the keel, new mast, changing the weight of the boat, everything, like all that type of stuff.
Yeah. So the keel that we have the keel, it's in our yard and it's 10 feet long. So the draft of the boat is actually 12 feet when it was in racing trim. And so we obviously want to reduce the draft of the boat. And we can't do anything really until we have a mast. And so the first, the first project was to find a mast. And so these naval architects, that's where they're coming in. They're being a great help. There's one guy specifically that's up in BC, and he actually, he worked for Far Yacht Design, and he helped design Open 60s for the Vendée Globe.
Wow.
And so he's helping me kind of analyze each mast that comes up to make sure that it will, you know, stay standing in the boat when we change things like riding moment and everything. So the first thing is to find a mast. And then once we get the mast here in the yard, then we can figure out how we can change the keel to, you know, let us reduce the draft mostly.
Yeah.
Based on how the weight of the boat changes. You know, there's also water ballast. And when the boat was raced, there's huge water ballast tanks in it. And they're really great for keeping the boat, you know, stable, but they take up a lot of space in the boat. And so I figure that what we can do, we're going to reduce them probably by about 2/3, and then, but use them for fresh water. And so I'll still have like 2000 pounds, more than that, like, no, 500 gallons of water. So 4,000 pounds of weight on the rail in water ballast that we can hike. And so it'll be able to be transferred from side to side. And so all these things have to be balanced, obviously, to get a mast that is lighter than the original one was. And then, yeah, reduce the weight in the keel a little bit, or reduce the draft a little bit. So all those things are still being worked out.
Are you like intentionally going for a shorter mast? Because I imagine you wouldn't need as much sail area if you're cruising it, or what's the idea?
Well, yeah. So the screen just changed. Your light just changed a bunch.
I don't know what that was.
So no, we are not necessarily going to reduce the height of the mast. I have a close friend who also has an Open 60 that was raced in the same races that Duracell was. It's actually just parked down the road here. And they have all the original equipment that the boat was raced with. And so, they have done a ton of cruising with it. They took it, they actually attempted the Northwest Passage. They took it down through French Polynesia. And the boats are, they're heavy air boats, basically. It's not like a light air boat. And so having that extra gear with a full original full sail plan for when the wind is light, especially around here in the Northwest, when we don't often get a lot of like big breeze, will be handy. But I think what will happen is we will sail with a reef in the main probably like 90% of the time that we're sailing the boat. So I would rather have the full rig and be able and reduce this, have like just sail with reduced sail a lot and then have that extra gear, you know, in case we need it. So,
yeah.
I think that's what we'll end up with, which is contrary to like a Dashu boat. Dashu boats often have pretty short rigs for like how long the boat is.
Yeah.
So
makes sense. I mean, considering, because like we're based in the Med, and it's like sometimes you go for a week and there's literally just no wind, or you might get like just a little puff of it. So yeah, having the extra sail area can like really come in useful if you've got like a big Genoa or a big mate. Really does help.
Yep.
Yeah.
But so, we're still going to simplify it. Like the boat, I think most often sailed with a Genoa, and we're probably going to change it to be like a fractional. Just 100% jib, and then with a staysail, and you know, if we get really lucky, then we'll have a third stay with a code zero on it or something like that.
Yeah, so that would be really
all cool. That stuff is expensive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's where like doing YouTube might help. Yeah, yep. Just like hashtag Selden or type Seldon. I don't know what you do for this stuff. Anyway, yeah, that's cool. So what are you going to do about the keel? I mean, do you think it could be a pretty simple project of like just slicing a bit off the top of it and attaching it back on?
No.
I have no idea. Yeah. That's right. I don't mind. I just discut the top off and like just put some new holes in there. How does it work?
I wish it was that easy. So the R keel is built in. It's the top, like 40% of it is steel, and then bolted onto the bottom is like a lead boot. And I don't know if you followed Sailing Camara. It's a Whitbread boat, an old Whitbread boat. I think it's 80 feet long. And they did something very similar to what we're doing in that they turned it into a family cruising yacht. And they also needed to reduce the draft of their boat. And what they did was they had a steel keel and they cut the bottom off of it and then welded a giant bulb onto the bottom and filled it with lead. And then sealed it off with, you know, welding the holes. And so making it a steel keel filled with lead. That's one idea that we have. Another idea is to take that steel stub that we have and just cast a giant bulb. And so instead of it being a boot, it would be a giant bulb, and then bolting that onto the bottom. There are a few ideas that we're tossing around. The nice thing about that steel stub is that it is, you know, it still fits the boat. And so if we can go without modifying that steel stub, or modifying it as little as possible, that would be the goal, just to make it easier on us. So yeah, there's the thing about that Sailing Camara keel. What they did is they also increased the cord. So they made the keel longer fore and aft by, I don't know how much they did, but, you know, that's
a lot goes into something like that. Contend
with. Yeah. So, and then you got to change like the keel bolts and everything, that how they attach to the boat. So we'll see. That's going to be probably the biggest project of the entire process, is redesigning the keel. So
yeah, for sure, it's definitely the part that would seem like the most intimidating. Like a mast is something, you know, most cruisers have a decent amount of experience of messing around with, like re-rigging it yourself or whatever, but yeah, when it comes to like designing or rebuilding a keel, that's something boat builders do pretty much.
Yeah, and I'm definitely very intimidated by it, but I'm anxious to like get it going, you know. We've been figuring out this mast thing for a while and have had some, you know, had some masts fall through that wouldn't work that we were really excited about. And so, yeah, I'm excited to get a mast in the yard so that we can start thinking about the keel project, because it'll take a while, I'm sure.
Well, like, how are you planning on actually going about this, like timeline? Are you thinking like get the exterior body done, then the interior, then the mast, then the keel? Like, have you got a process for how you're trying to complete it, or do you think it's going to be based more on like when you can get the materials and source the parts you need?
No, I think so. Basically, how I'm working it is, in the wintertime I work on the inside of the boat, and in the summertime I work on the outside of the boat. And so if everything goes like perfectly as planned, then ideally I'd be sailing the boat by the time I'm 40, which is it's just in about 2.5 years, something like that, which is an extremely ambitious goal to have, but you know, you gotta have a goal. And so we're going to give it a shot, but right now I'm working on getting the cockpit and the stern, you know, work on that all summer, maybe do a few things on the foredeck this winter, go back into the interior of the boat and start actually building the staterooms and the galley and all those things. And then next summer, kind of finish off building the doghouse. There's still a lot of work to do on the doghouse. And, you know, and maybe start fairing and painting and start lining up, you know, hardware and working out things like the bowsprit and the anchoring system. And in the meantime, you know, the keel project will kind of always be looming. I imagine that will kind of like just be always in process as soon as we get started on it. It'll take the, you know, entire project of the boat to actually get it done. It's sitting in my yard right now and it's 10,000 pounds. It's damn near impossible just to move. And so we had to get like tow trucks in here to actually get it in the yard.
Yeah, so, I watched. It was going like around some pretty tight corners as well. I watched the video that you put on of it actually being transported, and I was like, "No, no way! There's going to be like a terrible moment here." Yeah, it's a good driver.
Yeah, there were inches to spare for sure. Mm. So, but yeah, and then like the keel itself is a tough one to move around too. So, but we're having to adjust our schedule as we go along, but you know, that's kind of the basic process that we're following.
Yeah. So how do you fit all of this into your like personal life? Like right now, do you work a certain amount of hours per day on the boat and then a certain amount of hours on a normal job?
Yeah.
You know, does the missus get involved to help out? Like how does it work?
So, I have a business working on boats. I work for myself and I'm a one man operation, and I just get hired to do kind of whatever people throw at me. I do a lot of rigging projects. I'm a marine electrician. And so I do a lot of electrical work, installing batteries and solar panels and charging equipment. And then in evenings and weekends, or when I decide to take a week off, then I go and work on the boat. Janneke she also works from home. She's a writer. She developed curriculum for middle school students, science curriculum. And so she is a writer from home. And then she also does all the video editing and everything. And so her and I kind of collaborate as far as like getting the videos together, and then she does the editing. And then the goal is to, as the YouTube channel, you know, as we earn Patreon subscribers, then hopefully I can start working on the boat full time.
Yeah, because cool.
it's starting to happen. So hopefully in the next 6 months, I'll be working on the boat full time.
Yeah, that would be brilliant.
Yeah.
Man, I just from the perspective of your missus, like she was bought into the idea of cruising, I take it, because she's got, like, you've done it before. How did you sell the idea of buying like a ginormous 60-foot project boat and put it in the garden?
I don't know. It's so we did our cruise. We did 2 years in the Pacific, and she loves it. She absolutely loves it. And it's, you know, it was sad to be done with the cruise. And I was, like I said, doing all the studying of yacht design. And she had known for a long time that I really wanted a big boat project. I don't know if she knew that I wanted a boat project this big, but like once Duracell came up and we knew that the boat existed and that it was available. And then there was this two year time where between the time that we learned about the boat and the time that we got it, that we could kind of formulate this plan. And so it was kind of a blessing that we had all that time to like figure out what we wanted to do and how to make it happen. It was, you know, it wasn't a rash decision. And so it took some time to convince her, but she's 100% on board now. And we're both really, really excited about, like, the whole process has been really, really fun. And so just like all the people, the community that has gotten involved and how excited people are about the project itself. And so as it goes on, she's more and more convinced it's going to happen. So
yeah, that's awesome. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you don't like a yard or you don't like it enough to to keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's cool. So in terms of like cruising this boat, have you got anything particular in mind, any particular cruising grounds? Do you want to circumnavigate in it? Like, what's the plan with it?
We don't, the only real plans we have, we love cruising around here. Between here and Alaska is incredible cruising that people could spend their lifetime exploring BC and Alaska. And that's our first goal, is we'd really like to spend a lot of time up there. We love Hawaii. And so we'll be going, going to Hawaii for sure. I really, really love French Polynesia. And so I'm anxious to get back there. We plan to do some like sail training. We'd really like to do some offshore sail training with it. It'd be a really great boat for offshore sail training for people that are interested in getting into cruising and learning how to sail offshore. And you know, probably do some charters, like week-long charters for guests in the Pacific Northwest as well. And so, but as far as the circumnavigation, we're not thinking that far ahead yet.
Yeah. I mean, like in terms of what you just said then, that's, I just think that's a really good business idea. There's a, I can't remember which boat it is. It's a 70, it's 70. I'll send it to you afterwards anyway, so you can see it. So it was one of the, it was in the Rolex race something, I can't remember. I'm not into racing like at all. I know barely enough. Anyway, private company bought one after it was decommissioned. They changed up the rig, put a massive engine inside it, and they just go from like the, I think they go from France to the Caribbean, and then they shoot back, and they just constantly do these loops. And you basically buy a bunk on it. It's still kitted out like the original race boat inside. But it's like good offshore experience. My friend did it. Unfortunately, when my friend did it, they got like 40 miles offshore and the mast broke in half. So it was like, yeah, it was really unlucky. And it was like during the height of COVID. So they got towed into a marina. And then the marina was like, right, you need to quarantine. So, yeah, they were threatening them with basically being stuck in like this race boat with like limited provisions for like 2 weeks, because they were intending to go from, I think it was Cadiz to the Canaries, which in that boat would have been like 3 days. It would have been nothing. So, yeah, it was like, okay, 2 weeks is not something we planned at all. But so like for, I think it was 5 days in total on that boat. I'm sure my friend paid like $2,500, and that was just for a bunk. So, you know, you haven't got like a state cabin or anything like that.
So, yeah, that's ours is not going to be like, it's not, we're not building a super yacht, luxury yacht or anything. We're going to be, it's going to be simple, but very comfortable. And so, yeah, I think it'll be perfect for, having students to knock around in there.
Yeah. Have you given thought as to like the navigation equipment and the electronics, like what type of battery system, navigation, solar, all that type of stuff? Have you thought about any of that yet?
Yeah. So the as far as electrical goes, we plan on it being an electric hybrid boat. That would be the ideal situation where, and it'll be a serial hybrid where there will be a big generator that will power an electric motor and charge a big, huge battery bank. And then on top of the doghouse, there's enough room up there for probably 2 kilowatts of solar panels. Plus I'll probably end up with, this is only in my head. I haven't drawn anything up yet, but I'm hoping to have some kind of canopy bimini on over the cockpit that will host some more solar panels. And so, yeah, it'll be a very beefy electrical system. And then as far as electronics go, you know, that's something that I will work out when it comes time to, you know, fit that stuff out. Because things are changing so fast technology-wise that, you know, there'll be some cool stuff out by the time I'm ready to install, you know, the displays and autopilots and stuff like that.
Oh, it's so impressive now. Like, I remember when I first started like sailing, and I think I was like 16 when I got my first boat. And it's like, you know, the stuff that you aspired to own, these Raymarine chart plotters, like you look at it now, you're like, oh my God, like, you know, the phone I had 10 years ago was better than that. Whereas like now it's like, just get one screen and the rest of it, just like flick them onto iPads and iPhones or, you know,
yeah, exactly. Androids,
whatever. You yep. control your boat from your phone. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. And so I'm really, really looking forward to that process, but yeah, and you know, it'll be another great opportunity for, you know, somebody to just sponsor the boat. So
yeah, for sure. So you're thinking of probably having like a few kilowatts of solar panels on the boat, and that will power the battery bank. And then you've just got the generator in case you're sailing a few days and you've got no sun.
Yeah. So for long distance motoring, we'll have the generator there.
Yeah.
We installed a system pretty similar on our last boat. And what was really nice about it is that you don't have a ton of range with the battery bank when you're just running the motor off the battery bank. You know, we might get like 25 miles off of it or something. But the nice thing was, is that that motor battery bank was so big. The motor battery bank was charging our house bank. And it was so big that we could live at anchor in the middle of winter for a week without having to charge our batteries. You know, we were running a fridge and a freezer, and it was incredible. And so that's the big advantage to doing something like this is, you know, you have this big battery bank, you can live at anchor for a long time. If there's sun, it's, you know, infinite. If you need to charge it, you have this huge generator that you run for like 2 hours and it will charge the battery bank for another week or two or whatever it is the battery bank is good for. And then if you have to motor for 2 days, you know, you just run the generator, it pushes that electric motor and you just power along. So yeah. And then plus like you said, the big solar array will be very helpful. We're not going to rely on that, but it's kind of auxiliary.
Yeah, I mean, it's free. Well, it's expensive to get free electricity, but, you know, just, once you've got the expensive stuff on the boat, it's free to keep it going, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And then plus, I'm hoping that the electric motor will also be a hydro generator as well. So while we're sailing, more free electricity.
Yeah. You know, I'm just waiting for a breakthrough when it comes to batteries. Like, but I mean, batteries is the easiest one. Everyone's working on that. Like, I mean, I know we've got lithiums now and they're good. They're still quite expensive. They've come down quite a bit. You can get them a lot cheaper now. But like solar panels as well. I mean, if you look at like the efficiency of solar panels, they're terrible. There's got to be, you know, someone come along soon to say, you know, these solar panels that everyone's got on the houses and the boats that are like 18 or 30% efficient. Maybe 20 and some like good quality ones. There's got to be a way of getting that up to 100.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about solar panels to make sense of that. But yeah, like 21% or something is like an expensive solar panel.
Yeah, super expensive.
And with our doghouse, the panels will have to be the flexible kind, which are not as efficient as the, you know, fixed frame panels.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So...
yeah, might just have to like replace them after a few years. I think it's when the plastics start to fade. Although, you know, I was actually looking at some the other day. If I can remember which device I was looking at them, I can probably check my history and show you. But I found one that was, they were basically, they weren't completely flexible. They were like semi-flexible, super tough, but they came with a 10-year warranty of like no drop in voltage. I was like really impressed. But for a 250 watt panel, it was like $500.
So, wow.
Yeah, it was expensive. But if you're in that position where you need a flexible one, you don't want to replace it after a couple of years.
Right.
If you're going to keep the boat for 10 years, it might actually be worth it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing, just like the electronics, that's all of those things are advancing so fast that hopefully maybe in 2 years they'll be up to 25%.
Yeah. Efficient. So what brought you to this stage in your life where like you think this is a good idea? I think it's a good idea. But like, what do you know what I mean? What journey did you take from like a sailing perspective and then like a boat building perspective as well? Because like you're a boat builder. What eventually brought you to this decision that you want to, you know, get this huge boat put in your garden Because it's not the type of thing that you think of like a year before. It's, you know, a series of events that have happened through your life that have made you want to do this.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I guess I built my first boat like 10 years ago now. It was just a little 18-foot plywood boat, and I had a wonderful time doing it. It was super challenging. I was working at a boatyard at the time, and I asked the owner of the boatyard if I could build a boat in the like back of the shed. And he was happy to let me do it. And it took me like a year and a half to get done. And I was really, really into it. And it kind of set me on this path of like really getting into doing, you know, big boat projects. I just enjoyed it so much. And after that, I bought a boat that I lived on for a long time, and I really enjoyed working on it and kind of, you know, just making it better. And then same thing happened with our last cruising boat, was that it needed a lot of work and, to get ocean ready. And I think around that time that I was fixing up that cruising boat, that was when I realized, man, it'd be so fun to have just like a hull, just like get a hull that I'm really excited about and turn it into what I see as the perfect cruising boat. And so I've been racing for a long time, and you know, I love a boat that performs really, really well. And so I think the racing and learning about sailing in that way, plus getting to work on my own cruising boats, kind of led me to the spot. Yeah, I think having that idea of wanting a big boat project that I could start from scratch has been in my head for probably 6 or 7 years, something like that. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I didn't, it comes from a place of you already having quite a lot of experience as well. Like the idea to me would just be so intimidating. I'd leave home. I'd run off.
I've been really, really lucky with some of the people that I've sailed with and learned boat work from that are very, I would say, like out of the box thinkers as far as sailboats go. Like they were kind of people that were not beholden to like the yachting culture, which can tend towards like perfection and like more is better and keeping things simple, I guess, is like what I would say is their kind of mantra. Is like, I really, really, really appreciate people that know how to simplify while keeping things elegant and easy to use, practical, all those adjectives that, you know, I think make cruising more fun, and, you know, the less maintenance that I have to do, the better, you know. And I've spent a lot of time with those kind of people. And I've been really lucky to have met them and worked with them, sailed with them. So, yeah.
It's just like a practical take on what you want a cruising boat to be, really. Yeah. If you simplify everything, I mean, it's nice having so much fancy stuff, but it's like, if you're out there and then it starts to break,
yeah,
and you're not, you know, a DIYer, you know, that's when like cruising can just like really destroy your life.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, it is a big, boon, like it, or it's tough on people for sure. Just like you said, it's really tough on people and they're having to maintain systems too much.
Yeah.
So
how did you get into boat building?
I just started doing it. I don't know. I was working at the boatyard and, I was a bottom painter, and it was my first job in a boatyard. And, I really wanted my own little race boat.
Was this like out of high school or college?
It was after college. I was like 25. Yeah. After college, I actually learned to sail while I was in college, and I did a ton of racing in college. And then after college, my girlfriend at the time and I jumped on a boat in Portland, Oregon, and cruised down the coast and ended up in Nicaragua. And I was a charter captain on a little booze cruise in Nicaragua for like 2 years, and then came back to Seattle and started working in a boatyard. And I was a bottom painter, and then I really wanted my own boat, and I didn't want, you know, one of these cheap clunky things. There's a million of them for sale around here. I wanted something super fast and that I could afford. So I knew I had to build it myself. And I built it's called an I-550. It's a 18-foot like sprit boat, fast thing. So, and that's what got me started. And I've been doing it ever since.
Oh, it's really cool.
Yeah.
So right. I imagine, you know, the specs on the boat or what it was anyway, you know, when it was full set up for racing. Have you got any goals in mind as to like the types of speed that you want to get it to be able to reach, anything like that?
I don't know about a max speed. I know I've heard what it can do, and I don't think I'd want to go that fast. But, you know, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but if we could, you know, if we did like a loop of the Pacific and if we could average 8 knots, that would be incredible.
Yeah.
And so, you know, making an average 200 mile days, I think that's probably a little bit of a stretch, but, you know, doing a lot of 200 mile days would be amazing. So,
yeah, I'd like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think most people, the closer you get to 200 and away from 100, the better, you know?
yeah the best we ever did on our last boot was 175 miles. We did that once. I think we averaged about five and a half miles an hour. I have 5.5 knots.
So
yeah, 8 knots would be a big improvement.
Yeah, it's pretty good though. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, listen, man, thanks very much for like explaining, you know, a bit more about the project and your story and what you're trying to do and all that type of stuff. And yeah, I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to carry on watching, because it's just so intimidating to me, but it's so interesting watching you do these videos, because like you're just so straight faced. And I'm like, dude, that's massive. You know, you're just very straight faced. You know, it looks like it's a breeze.
It's intimidating to me too, but it's, you know, how do you eat an elephant? It's like one bite at a time. So just got to keep plugging away. Eventually it'll get done. So, but I really appreciate you talking with me. It was super fun. I like what you guys are doing.
Oh man, thanks. I really appreciate that.